This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. Again, I am Rob Calder. You hear from me every week, joined by the country crew today. We've got Zoe and Coops in the chair. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Excellent. I really should have pointed to one of you first.
Really should have.
That. Yep. Apologies. You'd think by now I'd be better at this. Apparently not. Very weary gaze room this morning, I would suggest. It's been a couple of rough nights with 10 p.m. Boomers and Opals games. SDP returning. I know I was at the coldest place on earth, I felt like, yesterday morning at 6:30 in Eltham Leisure Centre. Thankfully, we weren't the ones evacuated that had been in the pool when the alarm went off yesterday morning. So we got lucky. We were just straight outside and no problems there as the poor oldies were rolling out in -2 degrees, it felt like, straight out of a pool. So could always be worse. You rolled in last night very late, Zoe, a couple of trips.
Yeah, so Ballarat Monday night and then Warrnambool last night. So it was a 1 a.m. return home, but I got to listen to the Boomers on the radio, so that kept me awake for the drive.
They have radio for basketball?
Well, no, I streamed it through my phone and connected it. I'm pretty innovative, so.
Technologically savvy,
yeah.
We'll call it. Yeah, maybe not. So thankfully not pulled over by anyone, but no. Fantastic to have the Boomers and Opals on TV where everyone can see them. This has been huge personally to be able to see international basketball, and it's not just Boomers and Opals. It's obviously a range of other countries as well where you just get to see some of the best in the world. Like, I think everyone knew who Luka Doncic was before this tournament. Everyone absolutely knows who he is now. It's phenomenal to watch those guys play. And on both sides of it, the men's and the women's competitions have both been phenomenal. So what have you seen so far, Coops, that you've enjoyed with the Olympics?
Yeah, I think it starts with the coverage. I just want to piggyback on the back of that. You know, to have a basketball dedicated channel that you can access via the laptop, you know, I genuinely cannot remember anything like that in the past. And that's obviously showing where our sport is, and that's fantastic. But the competitiveness, the passion, and especially when you're talking about big-time players like Luka, even probably lesser-known names, but some that we know in the community, like a Campazzo, you know, after that loss last night, you know, in tears. This is a big-time athlete, you know, plays in the NBA, you know, won at EuroLeague, you know, won internationally, and the passion that he has for his country, just, it resonates, you know what I mean? And it really gives that special meaning to what we're watching. When you're talking about basketball, I just love the innovation. You know, the Spanish, you know, some double drag action into the 4-out-1-in secondary. We saw a lot with, like, the Phoenix and some of the other NBL teams, the Boomers defense at the moment, I mean, especially with Thibodeau on the floor, you know, the way that they're flying around and protecting the rim and tagging rollers and then, you know, recovering back is really impressive. I mean, you open a can of worms, Rob, you know,
yeah,
I can
apologize. Going,
so I'll wrap it up there. But yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. This, you know, for me, international basketball is the pinnacle and I just can't get enough of it. So, you know, it's been fantastic.
Physicality is a big one. Like, it is so different to what we even have here in our national league, like what you're able to get away with. But it makes it awesome to watch. And it allows the highly skilled to really shine through. You need to be highly skilled to be able to maintain that physicality and still be successful. The lack of reliance of an on ball has been huge. I've kind of enjoyed it, seeing more of a return of cutting, a lot more like dribble handoffs, which I know then turn into on balls sort of, but you know, more gets game, all that sort of stuff. So it's been a real shift away from scripted A to B, B to C, C to D offense, and it's sort of what it looks like to me. Here are some rules or some instruction and play, and we're getting to see some really impressive basketball out of that. From a technical perspective, something I've noticed, and this isn't a bag of anybody or a shot at anybody, but I've noticed that there's a real lack of unsportsmanlike fouls being called in the last couple of minutes of the game. Like, I don't think I've seen one, you know, we've all seen it where it's like ended a game. That's how I would love to see it called here. I think that was, that is perfect. Like the breakaway type to stop that Euro foul, absolutely keep that in there. But they've allowed them to foul to stop the play to get more possessions and play that IQ game towards the end. And that makes it really fun to watch. So That was probably a really big one for me. And, yeah, hopefully we can sort of bring that back into our national leagues and then filter it down.
Yeah, most definitely. One thing we do have to sort of touch on a little bit is the amount of retirements that are going to come after Olympics. A lot of people do play their career to play in an Olympic Games, and then that's kind of the pinnacle and they walk away. We did have a number of players retire yesterday as they got knocked out of quarterfinals. Luis Scola from Argentina and the Gasol brothers from Spain. That was phenomenal to see what the Boomers did last night, Coops, with how they sent Luis Scola off, not with a 40-point loss, but the respect they showed towards him for the amount that he's done for the country as well.
Yeah, I mean, what a demonstration of what the Olympic Games is. You know, that both teams, referees, you know, the limited people in the stands, like everybody was on their feet, you know, they were clapping. There was genuine admiration and love and respect for this guy who's given the game so much. And yeah, even the commentators, the guys, you know, Gazy and Bose are talking about, you know, this guy played for Argentina in, games that didn't mean anything, exhibition games, because of what it meant for him to represent his country. And to see everybody in the stadium honouring that was incredibly moving. And I love the fact that we have that in our community. I love the fact that the Olympics does that. And I think it radiates beyond sport. You know, that we can love and respect people that way, and obviously not to get too philosophical, but that's, I think, you know, a huge part of when the world comes together to compete at the games, that things like that happen. So it was awesome to see, and the game's going to miss them, but what a wonderful opportunity to now draw on their experience in other roles and open the door for the new crop coming through, and what a crop it is.
Yeah, and Marc Gasol spoke about that, like he could probably get one more world event out of it. He's like, no, I'm done. Like, we've got a number of young guys coming through, but for them to get an opportunity, I need to go. And like that selflessness of being able to recognise this isn't about me, this is about the group as a whole. And Spain have got one of their female players, Leo Pelayo, that played out here for Dandy Nong as well, who did retire but came back without trying to retire.
The Katrina Hibbert.
Yes, indeed. I would suggest she will probably retire at the end of this Olympics. Like, that'll be another massive send-off for her, regardless of which way their tournament ends up. Obviously, we hope they don't win gold, because we hope the Opals win gold. But it's a phenomenal thing to have such a pinnacle tournament that is watched by so many, and just the respect shown. Like, Scola carried my fantasy team for a lot of years there. He was like the guy that no one really knew about, because he was playing in Europe for a long time, and he could play like three different spots. So he gave you that little bit of flexibility on your roster as well. Like, there's a real nostalgic sort of feeling with me seeing him and the Gasols retire. It's like, that was part of my junior like love of the game as well. It's amazing really how much it changes your perspective on the world game when you see these guys that are just revered. And, you know, Scola played, he was one of those guys that was like pick 56 or something like that by the Spurs, stashed for a lot of years, came across, everyone's like, who is this guy? And it's like, damn, he's pretty good, and turned it into a great NBA career. And then went and played internationally. Like, I think he's playing in Italy or something like that at the moment as well. Like, these players, just because we don't see them on NBA League Pass or WNBA League Pass, doesn't necessarily mean they're no good. And we get to see the best of them when they come to the Olympics and things like that. It's phenomenal to watch.
Yeah, well, I could only listen to it through the radio, and it just made me emotional listening to the applause and just imagining what it would have been like to be in that venue while that was happening. Like, just unbelievable. But I think also something that's come out of these particular players, like you talk about in particular Gasol and Scola and Pelayo, you know, they're kind of changing the face of when your career ends. Like, they're all in their 40s. Like, so it used to be you'd get to about 33, 34 and be like, okay, they're done. And they've just proven, you know, you've obviously got Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi on the women's side as well, that they're changing the scope of what it means to be a professional athlete and when your career does in fact actually end. Now, they've had to put incredible time and effort into keeping their body right and all those sort of things, but it is actually possible. And being able to have those athletes for those extra years and have them around your new young crop that's coming through, to be able to continue that culture that they have, is just invaluable. And that's, you look at it and you look at the way, or I haven't seen it yet, but hearing the way they responded, everybody responding, it's like to them finishing their career, And you can just see how much they've given more to the game than just points, rebounds, assists, all that sort of stuff. Like, they're leaving legacies. And I just think that's just the most incredible thing. It's incredible for one, for them, but then to have that legacy be spread across the world. Like, the world basically farewelled Scholar last night. It was just amazing. And then there's a picture I saw on Twitter this morning of, and you could see sort of the back of Paddy Mills, I think it was, and he's clapping. And Scholar's looking at the Australian bench and he's almost in shock. Like, so to still even be that humble of, oh my goodness, I can't believe you guys are giving me this send-off. Like, it's like you're one of the best players in the world. So it's just amazing. And, you know, to be able to be one of those players, I think, would be the dream of any athlete. But, you know, very few get to do it. So to send them off in the right way, I think, is just incredible.
Well, you don't get that if you're a jerk.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, let's face it, they are clearly good people. Like, you talk about the Birds, the Taurosis. You know, Taurosis a little bit take it or leave it with her personality. She's a little out there. I can understand why people would be frustrated. But when you're that good, you kind of can be. But super humble people that have always put their hand up for national representation. It means something to them. And we've had a really good culture with the Australian program as well, always put their hand up for it. We do have to remember that regardless of how well the men and the women go and things like that, people like Andre Lemanis, like, he's a big part of the Australian culture. All the guys and girls that play NBL, WNBL that may not be available normally or may not be deemed good enough to make that final team, go and play the Asia qualifiers. Like, this is not just the team that we go and send away. It's everyone else that sits underneath that. It's our junior teams that sit underneath that. It's our grassroots coaches that sit underneath that. This has been a phenomenal era where we've been able to see some of our best ever to do it play. And similar to what you were talking about before, Coops, the access we have to this now is phenomenal. And the more eyes we have on this level, hopefully the more impact that has at the grassroots level as well, when people wanting to play.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And just pulling out what you guys were saying to you know, really try and hit our youth coaches between the eyes with it, you know, helping our athletes create great habits around, you know, looking after their bodies and creating longevity in their career, being elite at something, you know, a skill that's going to translate, you know, years and years down the track. And then that humility and that love of playing the game, you know, that's embedded by you, the youth coach, as a role model. And you can see these things carry into, you know, 40-year-olds, 41-year-olds, you know, and their Olympic career. So hopefully our coaches are listening and really take those things on and, you know, hope to embed them in the next crop of our Aussie, you know, green and gold kids.
And just the love for representing their country. Like, I don't know how you guys felt, but when I read that, I think there was an article or a tweet or there was something, and Dante basically told his management, I'm going to the Olympics, work everything out else around it. Like, I don't care what you think is best, or I'm going to the Olympics. I just felt such a sense of pride. And every coach that has come into contact with Dante that's had the privilege of being able to coach an athlete like that has played a part in that as well. Wonderful kid, wonderful family, but all of those coaches have played a part in that because they've kept that love for the game alive as he's gone through the ranks and progressed through the pathway. And he just loves representing Australia, and it's amazing. And then to watch him be performing so well, I hope I don't jinx him, touch wood, but to watch him perform so well, especially after the sort of setbacks that he's had, I just watch it and I'm just so full of just almost national pride. Like, it's ridiculous, to be honest. But it makes you remember why you do what you do.
It's every player's dream to get there. Not everyone will get there. Not every coach will get there. It's just what happens. Like, there's a reason it's a pointy end. But as long as we can keep that base healthy and keep everyone, and I mean, the culture part of it is huge. Like, both those teams are enjoyable to watch. That's a really big part of it, with good people involved in it. And so therefore, you want to feel that connection. It's when you have a team that doesn't necessarily represent what you are or what you believe in, that's when the disconnect happens. And I think that's where our senior teams have been phenomenal in that space. We have tangented off on this fairly significantly. This is not the goal of the podcast, but like I said, we are tired. We have just come off a nice 40-point win by the Boomers and the Opals.
We're up and about. Jeremy, we're up and about.
The Opals managing to get that Puerto Rico win as well. So Team USA the next couple of Team USA is today, actually. We're recording on Wednesday. So for the women's game, they're 240, I think it is today, and the men on 215 Thursday. So we'll already know the results by the time this podcast drops. He's hoping that we're in a good space. Otherwise, we may check out at the tournament and we'll just ride the Team Doncic train the rest of the way and we'll see how we end up there.
Toot toot.
Exactly right. Worst people to jump on board on that one, to be perfectly honest. So what we are talking about, it's that time of year again where everyone's starting to look for their next job. So VJBL appointments are coming up. State team interviews have just, the interviews haven't started, but the state team applications have just been called for as well. So what we are going to look a little bit at today is how you apply for positions, how you get the positions, and what are some things that can potentially help you along the way. This may make you, both of your jobs a little bit harder if we give up all the answers. So we won't give up everything that will potentially go on in an interview, but we'll have a little bit of a look at what coaches can be looking at from this perspective, what's right for them, what may not be right for them, what can they start to do to flesh out a resume, those kinds of things as well. So that's what we're going to have a little bit of a talk about today. So what are some of the things to start off with before you even apply for a job? What are some of the things that from your end that you really care about when an application comes in?
My biggest is making sure that the applicant has read the position description and that they meet the criteria. So as a basic, like the minimum is you need to meet the criteria. So that's, are they accredited? Do they have reps in the game? That's what we find is a bit of a stumbling block for a lot of coaches that send in their applications for state teams. It'll come in and there's maybe two or three seasons of assisting, one season of head coach, and now you want to coach a state team. Unfortunately, that's not enough reps. And go to any and watch any national championships. It would be irresponsible for us to put you in that position because there's so much pressure and so much more that goes into nationals than just simply running subs and calling plays. So making sure you have those reps and that experience and understanding that, you know, you need to know who is likely, like coming in with a depth chart and having that sort of information. Who's in your age group? Who do you need to, who do you think's in the mix at least for your teams? You know, the 4HPCs will know the age group and know who's in the mix. We need to know that you know that as well, because we will work with you in terms of selections, but we need to make sure we're on the right track. So, you know, if there's there may be an athlete that comes out of left field, but, you know, often there's a core probably 20 athletes that could all be in the mix and you need to know them. I think, yeah, they're probably the biggest ones for me, is making sure you've got the required accreditation, you've got the required experience and the reps, and you've shown proof too. I mean, Coop's made the point before when we were talking about this of, you know, I don't care if you've won VC. I honestly don't care. But I do care that you've been able to take a team and build them from wherever they are to improvement. And if you can show me that, that goes a long way for me, because that is what a state process is as well. You don't have long to do it, but you've got to show me that you can plan out how you can build that team from a team that may have never, like for 16s, that may have never played together, to a team that can potentially go and contend for a gold medal.
Absolutely. So how important is knowledge of how the tournament is played, Coops? So it's 16s is very different to 18s and very different to 20s. So when you are applying for those types of positions, how important is it that you've actually seen that tournament play out before?
Yeah, it's vital because it's just such a different beast. You know, it's something that, you know, not many get the experience in prior, and hence why we try and have that process of, you know, moving coaches through development role, assistant role, and on into head coach. Pardon me. You know, it's 8 days, you know, it's a game every day. Sometimes it's a double day. You're talking about reviewing your team and scouting the other team, you know, potentially in one day. You know, that's a lot of film. That's a lot of work behind the scenes. You've got to have trust in a team manager and a physio to be able to look after the group and get them up for a game. Maybe while, you know, you and your staff are you know, cutting film or in prep for the next one. And again, it's not something you're doing, you know, on a Friday afternoon, you know, before you take on Craigieburn. Like it really is something different. So spending time investigating, researching, talking with people who have been there. If you're an assistant coach and obviously you're looking to move up a chair, you know, when you're in that role, are you taking notes? You know, you're looking at things about, yep, the head coach did this really well. I would look to, you know, to utilize that, or this is a way that I think we could do it better. And you have that foresight to be planning and using the experience. And then it ties into what Zoe was talking about is, you know that tournament and what's going on there and how that relates also to my campaign and how I'm building my team to perform, you know, in that event.
Yep. And you've both hit on a really interesting point. It's everyone will have their different style of coaching. So how you coach and what you run and those kinds of things, that's everyone's business. They can do whatever they want there. But knowing which players are going to be available to you, do you select the team based on what your offense is going to be, in which case you might be leaving out the second and third best players in the age group because they simply don't suit what you run, but also knowing how that's going to build and progress over the course of a week, because an under-16s tournament, the offenses that you run and what you use there may not suit, in particular if you've been coaching under-12s or under-20s or youth league or something like that. So having a little bit of knowledge within that age group is really important as well, because ball screens are vital in under-16s. Because yeah, that's what under 16 kids want. They want a ball screen. They want to play downhill, and that's all they want to be able to do. But they're very different in 20s. You need to have different coverages in 20s, and you need to have different reads out of that in 20s as well. So trying to be able to flesh out what you believe in is really important, in particular when you start to apply for a position, making sure you apply for the right position. And just on that, and I haven't seen any of the applications come in, so if I have hit anyone on the head with this, I do apologize.
Neither of Coops and myself, by the way. We haven't seen them yet.
Are you better off applying for one position in one team, or are you better off just shotgunning that thing and applying for every position in every age group on both genders and hoping for the best and seeing what happens?
You need to narrow your focus. You definitely plan applying for both boys and girls is – Coops and I all look at that and go, you have zero focus in what you want to do. You're simply just trying to apply by a limit that, you know, go to the least – path of least resistance and get somewhere as quick as you can. I have no issue with somebody applying for head coach and assistant coach. I think, especially if you've been an assistant coach before, I think you should be applying for a head coach role and you should expect to be interviewed and not get it because you need those sort of reps in interviewing as well. Interviewing's not easy, and I'm sure we'll get to that a bit later, but I think definitely narrow your focus on which gender you want to coach. But if you want to put in, you know, if you've been in the program, say, 4 years, 5 years, and you're like, I'm going for head coach, I think that's pretty cool. I like that. I like that sort of guts and things like that. If you're still building and you're still gaining those reps that we were talking about before, then, yeah, head coach, assistant coach, because that also tells Coops and myself that you want to get there one day. You don't want to just be that perennial assistant coach that takes that spot for 6 years and doesn't actually have an interest in moving through. We want to try, and it doesn't always come to fruition. We don't always get, you know, development to assistant, assistant to first assistant to head coach. It doesn't always happen that way, but we want to see that that's where you want to get to as well. So I think just making sure, yeah, you base down on the gender is the most important for me rather than scattergunning across both.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, really similar. I think it has a lot to do too with, you know, you knowing who you are as a coach. And obviously that's really important the higher you go. That's knowing yourself as a person. That's knowing your philosophy. That's knowing your ability and aligning that with, you know, where you're applying. And we'll get into more, you know, that more deeply. But yeah, I just piggyback on what Zoe's talking about, especially with gender, you know, and that comes from experience. Especially when you talk about a nationals, you just got to jump over and coach, the other gender in a nationals. It just doesn't work that way. So yeah, having some serious thought about it, having, you know, your body of work, having an understanding of who you are as a coach, and align that with, you know, yeah, with your application.
So we're obviously talking state teams there. I'll come back to you in a second. Sorry. So apologies. How important is that for a lot of coaches that will also be coaching VJBL or Big V or NBL1 and those kinds of things? How important is it for them to be coaching the right team at that level to then help their application at a state team level?
Yeah, it's interesting. you can look at it a variety of different ways. I think it's important you've had some reps at the age level, maybe not recently, but you have had it. I think reps at a variety of levels is really important. You know, that ability to be down at under 12s and understand how to change your language and focus on fundamentals, and then be up at NBL1 or youth or seniors, and obviously being a lot more tech and a lot more advanced, are all just going to help you as a coach. But like what Zoe said, if you are at a different age group, then you just need to be doing your research behind the scenes and saying, okay, well, I am an NBL1 coach, but I love my time at under 16s. I want to go down to that level and help Victoria be successful. I'm going to do my research. I'm going to get out on some Friday nights. I'm going to go see some kids. I'm going to talk to some coaches, and I'm going to get to understand it. And then that way, again, you're proving to us that you care about it. And
I was just going to say, Coop's made the point about, you know, picking which gender you want to coach and trying to jump across. It happens a lot that we get coaches that normally coach in the men's game or the boys' game jumping across to the women's side. And it's not to say that we don't want coaches or you can't coach or things like that. It comes from a place of sometimes thinking that it's an easier run on the girls' side, and that's not impressive. So if you decide you want to try and change over and change from boys coaching to girls, or vice versa, we just see it more from a boys to girls side, please do reps in the girls' side first before you send your application in to me. Otherwise, I'm not going to be too impressed with it, because I find it lazy and I find it just trying to, you know, get the job too quickly and skipping steps, to be honest, and not skipping steps when you're coming into these sort of areas, trying to put in for state teams and things like that is a really important one. You know, everybody wants something now. I think Ash might have mentioned it last week or the week before. Everyone wants that job right now, and there is work that needs to be done, and you also need to show, if you have switched genders, that you're actually interested in coaching that gender. You're not interested in just getting the gear and then taking off and back to the other side. So, a bit ranty, so I apologise, but it is a bit of a bugbear for me. And, so if you're planning on applying for country women, there's just some advice for you.
Make sure you've coached in that side.
Yeah.
It is. It's valid, though. You need to have shown some experience and some reps, as you've both said, that what you're trying to apply for, you've done before. This can't be a first-time experience. And I'm a little critical of people that sort of say, look, I want to be involved in state teams because it'll help me develop as a coach. Hold on. Like, yes, it will, but that will be as a byproduct of something else. Your job is to actually develop the athletes and put them in a position. Don't come to state teams looking for development for you personally. It will just happen intrinsically. That's what it is. But your job is to make the players better, to put them in a position where they can showcase their abilities to hopefully be recognised to move on to another level. As with all coaching, this isn't about you. Like, you have to shelve that thing early and make sure that you're in it with the best interests at heart. The gear is nice. Don't get me wrong. Like, everyone likes wearing state gear. But by the same token, it shouldn't be the motivating factor behind it. It should be, can I help the athletes? That's the real push, I think, for that.
And from a country perspective in particular, you can't wear the gear anywhere other than state stuff. So don't be focused on the gear. be focused on the kids.
Rob, when you were a state coach, especially head coach, how many coaches did you have that were pathway, that were really keen to move into it, come and ask about, can I come to practice? Can I see some session plans? Have you got a strategic plan?
Yeah, tons. You know, it was great. Like, I mean, one, I love talking basketball stuff, hence the podcast. But it really was, I enjoyed having those conversations with people. And I know it's been a little bit of a history over the course that if you want to be involved in state team stuff, you've got to do some volunteer hours before that application even goes in. You can't just lob in and we sort of sit there and go, damn, who's this guy? Like, what's the story with them? We've got to do some groundwork on that, and we've got to do some fact checking and find out who they are. Whereas it's a really easy question and answer when it's like, yeah, they came and helped with trials last year. They numbered legs as people were walking in the door. They jumped on court. They took a basket. They put some time in. They put some work in. We get to have a little bit of a feel about who those people are. And when I say we, when I was the head coach, that was what I could now say, hand on heart, good person to have involved. Or, look, good person, but maybe a couple of years away from it. That goes a long way. I mean, one, it pads out your resume, which is always a good thing. But two, now you get to have a little bit of an understanding as to what those selection meetings are like, what goes on in those, because it's not just a case of let's close our eyes and we'll just pick a name at random and hope that they can go through. There's a lot more that goes on than that. So it's an opportunity, I think, to build your network as a coach. And I harp on this every week, but the more you can be talking to other coaches, I think the better that is. But the more you can then start to have those conversations about, gee, I saw what they did at state trials for that. I'm going to take that back to my club. I'm going to try and do the same thing, and I'm going to try and replicate that as best I possibly can. And I can speak for the 16s trials, because I saw those with both boys and girls this year. The attention to detail that goes into state trials in particular is incredible from the coaching staff. They have to be across everything. They're across games on a Friday night. They're across what goes on. They're across what happens at their training sessions. They have to be particular about what they want, where they want it, how they want it, those kinds of things. That's something you don't usually see at a VJBL level, because you'll probably have two or three very good kids in every VC team that plays on a Friday night. Then you'll have two to three of pretty good kids, but probably aren't really state-level kids. And then you have a bunch of kids that really enjoy playing and are very useful for what they are, but really aren't going to be involved in state stuff. So you have to coach those kids differently. So you do get a little bit more of an insight as to every kid you talk to at a state trial is probably one of those best two or three kids at their club. You can't be wishy-washy with your language or your direction or anything like that. It has to be on point, and it has to be accurate, and it has to be correct. Like, that's the biggest thing. And you see a lot of the coaches that come in and help out at trials, in particular those that have been through state team programs before, like, they light up. As soon as they get back on court again, it's like, damn, I've missed this. Like, it might have been a couple of years, but all of a sudden the juice is back again. They're bouncing around, they're into it, and it's like, damn, I actually wouldn't mind coaching this team. Like, I know I'm only here to help out trials, but it's actually going to be a really fun team to coach. And that's infectious, and that really just spreads itself throughout that coaching program as well. So I would always recommend, if you are looking to do something in that state program, reach out to the head coaches. And it doesn't mean you can only reach out to the under 16 girls coach for country. I don't know, reach out to all of them and just say, look, I'm looking to move into this pathway. Do you mind if I come and observe? And I think only once in all my years of being involved with state teams have I ever heard of anyone saying closed session. And to be honest, the kids had been kind of difficult to deal with the week before when there was maybe a little bit more of a crowd in, and it was a case of, no, we need a session where it's only us and that's it. It's open door. You can come in, you can look, you can ask questions, you can see what's going on. I think it's incredibly valuable.
Absolutely. I remember before I got involved in the state program and pathway, I asked Nick Abdusevich.
Yep.
I think I might have pronounced his surname
wrong. No, I think you're pretty good.
I asked him if I could go watch one of his sessions, and of course he was like, absolutely you can. And so I sat there and I took some notes, and you know, he's one of the best shuffle coaches in the country, and that was very obvious. Now, that I don't believe in shuffle or system offense, and that's okay. But I still got so much out of watching that session, like his attention to detail, how he got what he wanted, when he wanted it, how he built it, how he layered his sessions, all that sort of stuff. And I'm sitting there like my mind was just going a million miles an hour. I couldn't write fast enough to keep up with what was going on. But that's also where I was at as a coach at the time. I wasn't at the level to be able to absorb all of that and hold on to it. But you don't have to agree with, you know, you don't have to only go to somebody whose philosophies or, you know, style of play or system of play is the same as yours. Like, go and watch as many as you can. Go steal from everybody. Nobody has really come up with anything new on their own. Basketball coaches are the best ones, are the best thieves. So go and watch all of them, and you'll see all different things. And you don't have to agree with all of it, but that's just as helpful as well. You know, I don't really like that. I wouldn't do that. But then that triggers how you then would do it. And so now you're on your path of how am I going to build my program, or how am I going to run this should I ever get the opportunity?
Yeah, I think that's really important, especially when you come into the head coaching role and you're talking about building a team and a campaign and having, you know, an open mind and having an adaptable mindset and ability that, you know, all of a sudden you come in and you've run a certain style or system, you know, because you had your midget squad the whole year, and then your best six players are all 6'8" plus. And it's like, okay, you know, maybe it's not going to work, you know. So you have to have that ability to go, and exactly what Zoe's saying, like, get those different ideas, trial some different things, and understand when you get around that environment, Rob, that you were talking about, which is just incredible when you're working with the best of the best, it's going to be different, and different things are going to be thrown at you, and you got to be able to think on your feet and maybe create something you haven't done before that's going to best fit the group and get Victoria the gold medal.
That's a hope. It's always the hope. Doesn't always work out, speaking from experience, but it's always the hope more than anything else. But, I mean, you've both touched on it. You don't have to agree with everything. Like, it's some of the best learnings I got out of state team programs, which is I wouldn't do that way. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not to say that they were wrong. I just wouldn't have done it that way. It didn't suit my style or my personality or whatever the case may be, because every team is different. In the 3 years I was head coach, I didn't coach every team the same way. Like, that was very flexible based on what they are and who they are, because not every personality suits my personality for a start. And that's in itself difficult. So we have to be adaptive as coaches. So when they have to put their resume in, the pieces of paper, how many pages is too many, Coops? Like, do we want to know their coaching history from, like, 1993 domestic?
Coops sends in the Bible.
Mine starts with the backyard.
Yep.
As a young boy growing up.
Yes, I'm officially back on the pod. Story time. No, it's definitely about less is more. You know, keep it simple, keep it relevant. You know, a playing history is great if it's relevant. You know, did you work with some really great coaches that you're able to learn from as a player? You know, but again, we don't want to know about domestic. You know, if you've had the luxury and privilege of having a really storied career, both as a coach and or a player, you know, more available on request is always a great line at the bottom of those sections, just to keep it punchy, keep it relevant. You know, again, you know, coming back to what we were discussing earlier, you know, give us the experience of the reps that are going to be important to what we're talking about. Talk about, some of your skills, and your attributes, some things that relate to the position description. And it's all about relevance, but it's definitely about keeping that thing as punchy as possible. Usually 2 pages, if you crept on a third.
Just reduce the size of the picture.
Reduce your font size. Reduce your font size.
That's it. But probably about 2. And like most things, show it to somebody. Show it to your mentor. Show it to somebody who's gone through the process before. Have them run an eye over it for you. And, that'll always help.
Yep. Would you put your team's records on a resume, or would you sort of leave that off?
On mine, I have some finishes of some of the higher stuff that we've done. Some of the green and gold things I did, and we had some good results. I put that on. I felt like that demonstrated an ability to be successful in those tournaments, and that's obviously important. A third place VJBL finish, 19 years ago. Now we're not starting so to get away from it.
Yeah. Well, that's a hard part. I mean, your VJBL finish is usually relative to your team.
Yeah.
Like, it's very rarely the rankings at the start of the season too dissimilar to the rankings at the end of the season. So if you're a team that was ranked 31st and all of a sudden has JAG VC in the top half and you're a top 4 team, absolutely put that in, because that shows you've been able to develop, provided you haven't just poached the program and you've just dragged in kids from everywhere. It shows you've been able to develop and put something together there.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit different. I do want to see if you've had some failings, because I want to see that it hasn't always been easy, to be honest, because coaching isn't easy, and nobody's gone through on a perfect run, had the perfect team every season, won every game, done all of that. So I kind of want to see that you've taken a couple of knocks and you've stayed with it. And this probably is directed in particular at female coaches, because we take some hits and we take them a lot harder. When I say a lot harder, we make decisions based on those hits. And so I want to see that, all right, I had not such a good season here, but I picked myself back up, and here's my, we were ranked. Like, those rankings are the ones that, like, I completely agree with, that showing that building of here's where the team was and here's where they got to, and this is the improvement. But a lot of the time too, once we get to see who has applied, if we don't know them, we'll start doing our research too. So there'll be, phone calls to coaches within our networks that you might work with, or things like that. So, you'll never come into these processes with us going, I know nothing about you. You know, we start and make sure we do our due diligence as well.
Yep. So when coaches put down references, what sort of references should they put down? How many should they put down? Those kinds of things.
Well, no more than three. But to be honest, they're not the. We will check with them, but they're not the ones we're really going to check with. We're going to check with ones that you haven't put down, which is probably giving up all the answers to what we do. But it's important, you know, because references, they're going to be glowing of you. That's why they want you to get the job. They're generally friendlies that you've worked with. And like I said, we will still check in with them and things like that if we need to. But the reference from someone you haven't put down will probably hold a lot more weight because we'll be able to get something that from somebody who isn't as invested of whether you get the job or not.
And you've usually checked those before they've walked in for the interview, haven't you, Coops?
Yeah, every time. And just a heads up, references with the same last name, that's a red flag. Also, a reference of someone in our community will always hold that little bit more weight. So again, it comes back to what you know you were talking about, Rob. Like, go and spend that time with guys that have been in a state program or you know been in the high performance pathway before. You know that that can give you a reference where we can say, oh well, we know that person. You know, we trust and value their opinion. It's going to carry more weight. It just is. Yep.
Just always make sure you ask them before you put them on your resume because the worst thing is ringing up somebody that cold you call. Say, oh, they've put you as a reference. And they go, oh, that's nice to know. And you go, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, may have dropped you in this, unfortunately. Yeah. It's very valid. How important is it that coaches are actually involved within the Basketball Victoria programs to get state positions in the first place? Like, we want those state coaches involved at for the country side of things like jamborees, academies, SDP, those kinds of things. How much weight do you put into that when appointing coaches?
It's paramount because what we're doing is a program. You know, it's not these standalone teams. It's not players that just come in, represent for a week and then go away. Like, we're really trying to build something. We're trying to build something special within a year. We're trying to build something special in 5 years, a decade. Like, this is an ongoing process. And the idea is that we're asking you to come and be involved in that process. And so we want to know that you, A, care about the program and what we're trying to do. You know, A2, you care about the kids and you want to get them better. You know, you care about the coaches. You know, you really are willing to invest in this thing and give it everything you've got. So that's where that volunteer space and the involvement and getting your face out there and enjoying being a part of it as a volunteer is just going to carry that massive amount of weight.
Yeah, for sure. And I think with being involved in our programs, you know, Coops and I have a rule, you have to contribute to the pathway to be considered. Now, obviously, there are caveats to that. Like, if Dean Vickerman was to ring up Coops and say, hey, I want to come and coach the 18 boys, well, obviously, Coops is going to consider that fairly heavily.
When was the last time you coached under 12s?
Yeah. Can I please have your three references?
Yeah.
But no, obviously. But, you know, for our VJBL level and state level coaches, you need to contribute to our pathway. And one of the big reasons for that is we want to make sure that we don't get – obviously, we don't get as many applications as the Metro side does. So we definitely don't want border hopping. So you need to contribute that way. But also at camp, at you know anything that we run, Jamboree, Nugget, all those sort of things, SCC, you start to get an understanding of our philosophy for a program as well. We want to go to nationals and we want to win games, but we also have a responsibility to get our long-term athletes exposed as well. So that might mean that you know, Coops and I might be saying, hey, this kid's got to go. You got to pick him. You might not want to pick him. And now we're in a conversation. But if you've been in our camps and in our programs and things like that, you start to get that understanding of why that is important. And so it makes it an easier working relationship as well. So, you know, we will never say you must take this person, but there will be conversations that are had. But I haven't had to have one yet, because all of our coaches have been involved in the program and they understand the main aim. Yes, we want to go win gold medals and we want to, We want to do those sort of things. But at the end of the day, the real measure of success for our program as a whole, but also the state program, is how many then progress through into COE scholarships, you know, Oz teams, Oz camps, all that sort of stuff. So, and sometimes our later developers aren't ready to compete at nationals, but they are ready to be seen by the next level up.
Absolutely. I think that's vital, to be honest. You have to, there are so many opportunities to get this extra work in. Like, not every session is 6:30 in the morning. There are sessions at night. There are sessions, like, there are 10 hubs and multiple sub-hubs across the state that coaches can be involved in. And it shouldn't be a case of, now that you've become a state coach or potentially a state coach, you drop that away. That should actually be your touch point to go and get those kids better. So then you have better kids to pick from, like, once you get into state teams. Like, shockingly, if you do the work, you will probably get the reward for it at the other end of it. So really vital on that end as well.
There is an understanding that, you know, obviously people have lives, they have work, they have family, yep. They have all those sort of things. So we're not saying you have to be at all things at all time. You have to contribute to the pathway, to the program. So that could be once a week. Like, that could be in our SCC, our Nugget, our Jamboree, all those sort of things, which don't directly relate to your state team stuff, but it shows us that you're invested in the program, you're invested in Country Vic or Vic Metro basketball. So,
just some help for potential head coaches, just on the back of that, is your ability to manage your staff. And, you know, if you can't get to something, can you send an assistant? You know, are you building a database, or are you building some notes and things that you guys can go back to? And, you know, that's a big part of the campaign and managing what we're talking about. And then that is definitely going to translate to the tournament play when you need guys doing multiple things at multiple times, you know, with hard deadlines. You know, you need those skills.
Yep, absolutely. And just remember, and it's the same with any job you ever apply for, it is very easy to Google someone's name and find their social media accounts and find out when they have slammed on another coach for yes. whatever they've potentially done, and just put a line through them straight away. Mm. Like, if you're coaching under 12s team and you're sitting there ragging on the Boomers and the Opals, saying, why are they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? They should be doing this.
The coach needs to be changed. Yeah, or like, this, like, what are you thinking? Come on. Like,
that's not being supportive of, one, the coaches, but two, the basketball and community. That's not helpful to anyone. So just do be mindful about, just pause before you post. Yeah. Like, it's... you might put it in the notes in your phone, but it doesn't necessarily have to be posted out there either. Yeah. So making sure that your persona and your reputation stays as clean as it possibly can in that space.
Yeah, it's definitely not about censorship. It's about courtesy and sort of integrity in your fraternity. You know, that's, we've got to look out for each other. We've spoken about this, I think, probably on the last two or three pods. But it's a courtesy, and it shows the kind of person you are too. So, and that's big for Coops and myself. We want coaches that are going to coach these teams with integrity, because that's a part of the culture that we're creating in Country Vic. And I know on the Vic Metro side, they're the same. So we want to make sure that that's being passed down through the athletes. So, yeah, you've been on a massive one there. Like, if you're on social media smashing other coaches, don't send your resume in.
Yeah, I want to hammer that point home. Like, you know, you're a representative of us. And, you know, if you're talking about a tournament, we're sending you to wherever it is around the country into a national environment, you know, wearing our brand, our logo, you know, and what that means, what that logo means. The you know, now 90 years of people and athletes and volunteers that have all put time and effort into what this is, you're now representative of that. You're a role model, and you need to go away with the constant understanding of what that is and what comes with it.
We're assuming someone's submitted their resume, it's been deemed as very good, we'll go with, and moving on to interviews. So a couple of things from the interviews. How do you present for an interview, Coop? So what are the first things that you would be covering off once you know that 6 o'clock Monday night, you're on, you've got 45 minutes?
First, he rolls up in a limo. Doves fly out as he exits the car.
Stretch hammer. 20-inch spinners. that's my everyday car. Look, to be honest, the first thing is how you dress. You know, you dress for the job that you want. And if you come in and, you know, you're in sweats and, you know, you kind of just roll through the door, then, you know, that's immediately sending a message of the kind of attention to detail that you potentially have. So first of all, understand that you are presenting yourself, and so how you dress and how you present yourself is important. You need to have your notes prepared. You need to have a confidence in where you can answer the questions or potentially take some questions where you want them to go, to be able to discuss, you know, your skills, your experience, your attributes, and what you're able to bring to the position. And then now we need visual aids. So, you know, film, diagrams, some sort of presentation that's going to back up, you know, what you're giving to us, your philosophy. And again, it needs to be thoughtful. You know, don't just go and rip something off YouTube because you think it looks cool. You know, do you have some film from a Friday night? Or is there a coach that you've been assisting at NBL one level and they're doing some things that you think would be great, you know, where you've applied for? And so, you know, we can go further into that, but I think, you know, that overall message is that attention to detail and the preparation that you're putting into it that shows us that you mean business and you're really into this thing.
Yeah, I think we can get caught up with video in particular of I'm going to show all these clips because I like them. And it's like, yeah, but why do you like them? And how does it link back to you? And how does that link back to your group or potential group, obviously? So that needs to be pointed and specific, much like a philosophy. You know, if you come in and your philosophy is kind of fluff, a bunch of quotes or things like that, that's not really going to hit the mark. You need to be specific about who you are, what you are, how you're going to do it, and that will be the most, I guess, effective, you know, and turn our heads, definitely. I think there's real merit in having that interview before you have the interview. So get some people together. I think you were involved in one recently for a job.
Yep.
with a friend, and you got together on Zoom and asked and get people that are going to throw like curly questions at you, because if anyone has met Coops and myself, we like throwing curly questions at people, and it's not to be nasty or to, you know, put you in your place, or it's none of that. Nationals is just a hotbed of pressure, and so those sort of questions, how you handle them, how you take them in and how you respond, it gives us a little bit of an indicator without watching you coach as to how you handle that sort of pressure. So definitely have that interview before you come in, so then that will help alleviate, because there are nerves. I remember coming into my first one and, my goodness, like I had to almost sit on my hands because I was like shaking. I hadn't had that interview before walking in there, and I think I really would have. My second interview the next year was so much, I felt was so much better. Yeah, definitely get those people together and try and help you out and go through how you would present and what you want to present, because then that'll also stop you doing what I'm doing right now, which is over talking. And sometimes that can lose your main points if you talk too much or repeat yourself or things like that. So you can weed out those little areas, get rid of them, and then you're ready to go when you step into the room.
Story time, Rob.
Back.
For regular listeners of the pod, they would know that this is third time lucky for me in this role. So interviewed three times on three different occasions to get it. And I remember my second interview, and Guy Malloy was one of the on the panel, and he asked me a question and I answered it, and then he came back and was like, oh, well, what if this happened? And then answered it, oh, but what if they did this? And answer, and he kept going and kept pushing and kind of prodding me and trying to get me into a place to fluster me, and you know, and it was great because obviously it was one of those moments that allowed me to leave the interview and say, okay, well, that's something I need to be more prepared for the next time. You know, I need to go and talk to my mentors about preparing me for. And so, yeah, so I just think that, yeah, any chance, like you guys are saying, just to find those guys that can throw the curveballs, do some different things, because they're definitely coming. So know your stuff, know it's coming, and do the prep, and that's your best chance.
So on the edited down version of this, it's just going to be Coop says Guy Malloy costume job. but it is valid. Like, and that's, I mean, realistically, how can you replicate coaching pressure and seeing, do people get flustered? Are they fairly cool? They think it through? Do they take a beat and go, yeah, okay, no worries, I'm thinking about what you're talking about. Here's how I do it. And they get thrown again. Because that is kind of like what you get at the Nationals too, where an assistant coach comes up and says this. It's like, yep, got it, no worries. They come up and say something again. It's like, yep, got it. Say something again. And at some point it's just like, hey, man, like, give me a break here. Yeah, like, I got this. Like, this is okay. I don't want you to stop coming to me, but you have to be able to take on board what someone's saying, process it, and then be able to make a decision based on that as well. So those pressure environments is actually what you want it to be. This is not a friendly chat when you come in for an interview. You have to sell yourself. But how do you balance selling yourself without coming across as arrogant?
Yeah, it's, I think, showing that little bit of humility. So if there's a question posed to you about, you know, how would you build your program or what would you do, show us how you've learned through your experience. So, you know, in my first year I did a VJBL, for instance, this is how I did it and it didn't work. But from that I was able to pull out that this needed to change, this needed to change, this needed to change. So that shows us, okay, you're selling yourself, but you've learned through your experience, shows us that the reps are there, and keeps you that little bit humble. So, you know, if you come in, sit down, you know, cross your legs and go, yeah, what? You know, well, we're going to go, no job. But if you can show us that, yeah, you've learned through those experiences, it's okay to tell us when there's been failure. And when I say failure, an experience to learn from. That's exactly what it is. We tell our kids all the time, you know, push yourself to the point where you make errors. We want you to make errors. We know every coach that comes in and sits down has made an error somewhere. Do you have the ability to own that error and then show us how you fixed it? And that would probably be the best way, I think, to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and then just building on that, I think just choice of language. You know, sometimes, you know, if you get a little bit too I, me, obviously we're, you know, heading down the wrong path there. So, again, you know, some humility, some recognition of some people that have helped you on the journey, and again, coming back to those failures, those growth moments, are definitely going to tell us that, you know, you're willing to work within a team, that you're willing to be humble, and you can recover from mistakes, and, you know, if they're not important at a tournament, I don't know what are.
Exactly right. And, I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see a lot of the video that comes in. My guess is you're going to see a lot of the boomers with Thibault helping out on pick and rolls or weak side defense. Yeah. He's going to, we want to play like this. It's like, well, great. You don't have Matisse
Thibault. You're picking Thibault.
Like, if he was still under 16s, we'd all pick him. Like, yeah. This is low hanging fruit. So it is important that you do find something that's relevant. It doesn't necessarily have to be a team that you've coached or something like that. There's nothing wrong with saying, here's how I would like to be able to play, personnel dependent on what goes on. Here's how I think I would implement it. And that is selling yourself with, this is my vision. Here's how I think I can get us to this vision. There will be some stumbling blocks along the way, whether COVID hits or you know, players get injured or whatever the case may be. But I think that's really important to be able to sell the vision, but also yourself within that. And it's not a case of I know who the other two or three people are that are interviewing for this job, so I'm going to put them down to sell myself. Mm. That is not helpful. What you need to worry about is yourself when you go into those interviews. Don't worry about who else is applying for them. They'll do their own thing. Sell yourself more than anything else.
Like when you're picking a team, you know, at Clubland, you know, and there's always kids that miss out, and whether it be the athlete themselves or their parents, and they start drawing comparison between kids that have made it and their kid, it's not helpful to anybody. So never draw comparisons to other coaches. We're not interested. If we're interested in the other coaches, we'll talk to them. We're interested in you and what you can do and what you can bring and how you can make our program and our athletes better.
What is it? Comparison is the thief of joy. Rob's deep quote. I've got no soundbite for that either. Like, it's taken so long to finally say something smart. But no, that's okay. But it is. It's really valid. Don't compare. You can compare in your team selections, like when you're comparing two athletes. But don't compare yourself to another coach. That's not what you want to be. And nor do you want to be. I'm going to be like Dean Vickerman, or I'm going to be like Lindsay Gazon. Like, that's not helpful. Be who you are. And that needs to resonate throughout your entire process as you go through this as well. Assuming you get the job, like, what comes next? What's the first thing you do once you get this job, Coops?
I'll speak from personal experience. I mean, people will obviously prioritize a little bit differently. For me, it's about a strategic plan. It's about having something there that allows you to go through your processes and tick your boxes. You know, obviously you'll have phone calls to make and, you know, your staff will be set up. That's a big one, just getting those guys together, then getting them in a room or on a Zoom or however it is and just, you know, getting to know one another if you haven't had that connection before, starting to share some ideas, you know, start exploring what's going to be happening. But having, you know, your calendar, you know, ready to go. When are my camps or my training sessions? Talking to your coaches, talking to fellow coaches around your practice games. How am I setting up my practice games? Am I building up, you know, we starting with some wins and finishing getting cracked because that's going to set the team up? Or, you know, do we need to get hit hard early and then, you know, taper down and get build some confidence? So there's a variety of things that you need to address. But for me, it's about having that strategic plan, having it all mapped out and being able to systematically work through it because very quickly time... you know, becomes of the essence and you need to maximize it. So, yeah, and there's no reason to start the strategic plan after you get the job. You know, that should be something that's pretty well formulated before you walk into the interview.
And it's bloody brought stressful. With you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brought with you
yeah.
into the interview. Yeah. We want to see that.
Absolutely.
And it's stressful when you're the person booking courts and things like that because you know you're turning up at like 2 p.m. for a training session. It's like, damn, where's the person with the keys? Like, this is now falls on me. Whereas when you're an assistant coach, life's good. You get told to turn up somewhere, you assume everything's good. Like, as a head coach, you're responsible for everything that goes right or wrong.
That's it.
So it's tough. So the planning side of things is vital. And I would strongly recommend if you are going into an interview, have a plan. When your camps will be, when your sessions will be, where roughly they will be, those kinds of things as well.
And we won't hold you to that. Well, yeah. You know, we know things change and all that sort of stuff, but we want to see that you've got that plan. But for me, I think the first thing you need to do, the very first thing after you hang up from receiving notification is to pick your phone back up and call your mentors and thank them for everything that they've done. Let them know and thank them. I think the pride and the feeling and the excitement that they get, whilst it'll feel great for you and it'll feel great for them, you're actually doing it for the next coach that needs their help. So, you know, acknowledging those people is really, really important.
It is really important to at least show some gratitude and some acknowledgement of yeah. those that have put in work with you as well. It's yep. nobody gets there by themselves. Yep. Someone has been helped along the way, whether they've realised it at the time or not, they've all been helped along the way. So it is right. important to show some gratitude. What if you don't get the job?
Well, I actually have a note here about not getting the job. Always ask for feedback. There's no problem with asking for feedback. Just be careful how you do it. So if I would say take a breath before sending either an email or a phone call, whatever it might be, regarding your feedback on why you missed out. Reason being, I've had some come in that were fairly aggressive because emotion was involved, and I understand that emotion. I've sat there before and missed out on jobs, so I understand that. You wouldn't have applied if you didn't want it. So when you want something and you don't get it, human nature kicks in and we get disappointed. The way you respond to missing out gets noted and, you know, will be remembered come next time. So I would say... Ask for that feedback, absolutely, but take a breath, you know, send it in, even if it's, hey, can we just grab a coffee? We're happy to do that, but we won't do it with people that start comparing themselves to others. I've done all of this. I've done that. How could this happen? We'll still give those people feedback, but as I said, that gets noted for next time around because things aren't going to go your way the whole week at Nationals, and if that's how you respond, our kids are in trouble. So make sure you just handle that in a professional manner.
Yeah, and then just go through your processes, you know, your evaluation, you know, self-evaluation, grab your feedback, take it to your mentor, take it to those people around you, you know, hey, this is what they said, You know, can you help me address some of these areas? You know, are there some ways that you can invest more in, you know, some things that you were lacking, you know, by getting into some different coaching environments, getting in some clinics, you know, some personal growth, all those sorts of things. It's, and then I think the biggest one is then just understand it's going to take time, you know, and it might not be the next year, you know, it may be the year after. But, you know, if you're serious about it, and especially you're serious about your coaching, you understand that this is a long process. It's about the journey. It's about enjoying the fact that you've got someone that's willing to take the time and give you feedback that's going to help get you better, and you get to go on the journey of being a better coach and spending more time with athletes and being in our community, because that's what it's all about. You know, we spoke about before, if it's about the instant gratification of you just being a state coach, probably never going to happen for you.
Yep, absolutely. I think it's really important. And it is. It's the response that is noted. Are you someone that's going to go away and sulk and go, well, I'm not going to do this anymore? Mm. Like, and look, for some people, they may have to make that life decision of, do I want to continue and invest time into this? And they may have reasons that they can't, and that's quite okay. But what you really want to see is the person that says, all right, I've missed out, I'm going to try and better myself. This is how I'm going to work at this thing. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to turn up for everything. I'm going to make them cut me again almost,
yeah.
and tell me no, because I'm going to be at everything. I'm going to work my tail off. I'm going to invest in my own professional development. I'm going to network with other coaches. I'm going to be around everything. I'm going to make it really hard to miss out on moving forward. I think that's a really good response from people as well.
Yeah. Well, I can't count on both hands the amount of times I've heard you say to coaches that have sort of come to you a bit despondent and about how just because you haven't got it doesn't mean you're not a good coach, or doesn't mean you're not good enough. It's either timing's not right, or there's someone better at the moment, or you just, there's a hole somewhere in your experiences or something like that. And that's sometimes the case. And, you know, I remember you saying it to me once when I missed out on a role, and it made me want to kind of punch you in the face a little bit because I just wanted you to be angry with me. But it was helpful. It was really helpful. You know, like, hey, this isn't that I'm not good enough. This isn't that I can't coach. This is that I need to invest some more time in these few areas, so next time I'm good to go. And having that response, but even having somebody be able to say that to you, that's why mentors are so important. Coops talks about it all the time. Having someone that you can trust be able to sort of hit you square between the eyes with that sort of thing is invaluable.
Yep. And that's the thing. Like, if you're applying for a state position, and we'll use Dean Vickerman, as the example, who also applies, whose references are, here's my championship rings. That's not on you. Yeah. But that is a great opportunity for you to say, actually, can I be involved with that?
Yeah.
Like, can I hang out with that team and find out what he does so that now I'm going to be in the position moving forward? And again, you may not agree with everything he does, but it might be a fantastic learning experience. And that's what a lot of this is. This is an opportunity to grow as a person where you can now say, okay, disappointment. But how do I respond to that disappointment? Yeah. And if it's to throw the baby out with the bathwater, well, this coaching thing may not be for you because you're going to be disappointed a lot in the sport. Well, so you've got to find a way.
Yeah, and some people, you know, they might think, well, yeah, okay, this is, you know, we're name-dropping Dean Vickerman, something crazy, but yeah, he's Dean Vickerman, but I've done all of this in the pathway and I've done all, and, you know, why isn't that my job? Circling back to where we started with this, it's not about you, it's about the kids. So if we've got the opportunity to give these kids exposure to Dean Vickerman, we're going to take it. So that's another thing to think about.
Well, it's not as if Dean hadn't done that as well. He just did it 25 years ago. Yeah. Like, it's not as if it hasn't been done before. Yeah. So that comparison thing really is so vital for our coaches.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it's our younger coaches that struggle with that the most because they are in a real hurry to get to where they get to. Like, I look back at my pathway, I was just lucky that I was coming through at the right times when people were moving out that I was moving in. And that was a sliding doors moment for me. That could have gone the other way. I could have been backlogged behind four or five other coaches that were just as good. Like, I probably got my first state head coaching position behind someone else that I thought should have got the job but chose not to apply that year. So, you know, was I ready? Maybe, maybe not. Was I the best candidate? At the time I was, because the other person didn't apply. But had they wanted to, I may have had to do another 3 years as an assistant coach somewhere. And I was prepared to do that. Like, I had no life. Basketball was life, you know. it's not going to be the same for everyone. So you do have to make some decisions along the way. Is this for you? Because if this is for you, get used to disappointment, because it will happen a lot. But the highs are also phenomenal when you can get a hold of those two.
Yeah, and I think something to remember too is that we're in Victoria, the most popular, competitive, enjoyable basketball state in the country. I recently had some time with a family that had come down from New South Wales, and they were just blown away at what basketball was in our state, compared to the situation they were in up there. And we just have to remember that sometimes, that competitiveness, but that also that opportunity to be around the game at all the varying levels. And, because people around the country, they don't get that. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Very fortunate to be in the position we're in. Good luck with interviews, if I don't speak to you two beforehand.
Thank you.
I don't think we've given up too many answers. So, but you will know if people don't come in prepared, they haven't listened to the podcast, which is not good enough.
That'll be on their feedback.
Like, you haven't listened. You maybe haven't rated 5 stars, or you haven't left a review. And that's not good enough from the coaching fraternity, because we do want the ratings and the reviews. We do appreciate the likes, shares and the retweets. Here's the segue. This is pretty
well
good.
Well done.
This
You've
is
done
very
well.
Well done. So any opportunity to help grow the podcast audience, that would be fantastic. We do appreciate it all. And if there are any topics of conversation you want to send in, more than happy to hear that as well. And we'll go away if we don't know anything about it and research it and come back and talk about it as well. So that will be the plan moving forward. Obviously, you can get us with the hashtag Talking Split. Coops, your Twitter handle is?
CoachNCB.
Can't miss it. Zoe?
At ZoeCar85.
Excellent. At Rob Colter. Thanks, everyone, for jumping into the podcast again. Go Boomers. Go Opals. We hope we are playing for medals this weekend. And we will catch everyone on the podcast again next week. Look, tune in and join the tribe on iTunes and Spotify. Put this basketball coaching on the next level. Pedal to the